Welcome, Doug, to Sasha Talks.
Well, thank you, Sasha. I appreciate the fact that I'm on your show. Thank you kindly.
So you are an entrepreneur, the founder of BBS Radio Inc., and you are a creator of different sorts. And I do recall you appeared several years ago, and you shared a brief story of how BBS Radio came about. Can you revisit that?
Sure. Well, I'm a co-founder with my twin brother, Donald Newsom. We've always worked together since the very beginning of time, actually. I was working with a cosmetic company at the time, helping build them into a natural or organic ingredient product company. And my brother found that he had time, so he was working with a blog site. So initially, BBS Radio was known as Blogin Service. And because it was blogs back in 2000, 2001, 2002, when he was doing blogging, and he was having such interesting conversations that he decided, hey, why don't we record these conversations? He was speaking to a gentleman by the name of Dr. Fred Bell, and he was one of those individuals that worked, I guess, in clandestine sort of environments with government agencies to analyze spacecrafts. It was such interesting subject matter, especially after 9/11 as well. I mean, a lot was going on there at that time that they decided to record it. And then they thought, wow, well, maybe we can not just record it, we could put it on the internet and do that live. And from there it was, well, maybe there's other people that we could join in the conversation. So it developed very quickly into a blog, then a phone conversation, a taping of it, a streaming of it, then adding people into the conversation in a live environment. And we may be one of the first, if not possibly, we could be, though I do know of another company that started ahead of us in name, to be able to do new media in this way. So it was really my brother's brainchild. And I came along afterwards in around 2008. Then I wore the hat of developing out the website, creating a structure for the company in different ways. But it's really his brain that came up with this. I'll tell you where the name Blogin Service then became Blogin Broadcasting Service. So that's where the B and the S came from. And we got the website, we incorporated in around 2005, and we got the BBS Radio domain name.
Referencing another entity out there, they did go out of business after 25 plus years. For some of them, that began online.
So many, Sasha, went out of business. And the few companies that did well, they really became aggregators and distributors of the information, other people's information, because everybody wanted to get their information out there, right? So a website would pop up and say, hey, you can give us your content and we'll send it elsewhere. Then everybody would sign up to give them their content, right? And so these portals became aggregators and distributors of information, and they literally took over. You know, because then they became the gatekeepers like Apple does for their store, their Apple store, and Google in the same manner. They became kind of the big boys because they had all this content and the gatekeepers, and they literally bought out everybody else. And they control the market in such a way as that if they didn't really like your content, you wouldn't really get anywhere. We saw that a few years ago when people tried to say, hey, maybe I don't believe in the elections, or maybe I don't believe in the COVID shot, or maybe I don't believe in a religion of any particular. And they were either driven out of the business they were in, or they were ghosted online. I mean, there are so many ways to literally get your information so it doesn't move. You might think it does, but it doesn't. And of course, during those times, there were a lot of games too, where people were buying for clicks, and you had bots starting to be created, and they were clicking about, and people would buy a million clicks and say, look how big I am. And in the beginning, it fooled a lot of people. A lot of people, you know, became very well known as a result of buying all this bot-related, fake eyeballs. But companies over time, they were taken over by the distributors, and the distributors, almost in every industry, they become the powerhouse and the dominant players. Other things that drove a lot of these companies out of business were not just the information that they wanted to divulge or allow others to divulge, and they were limited or they were put out of business, but also because they dealt with a model that my brother and I turned upside down. And what I mean by that is, initially, even in terrestrial radio, you have AM and FM markets where those networks paid their hosts, pay the person who's your anchor on TV, you pay them. If you had a magazine, you'd pay your writers for the magazine content. Well, Donald and I thought, and we may be the first that did this. I mean, there's so many firsts for us, it's hard to put them all down, but we thought, no, I mean, we want to charge the hosts because it's our distribution capability. If it's my magazine and I've got 100,000 eyeballs and you want to write for it, great. Now you pay me and I'll give you a little space in that along with your article that gets you more attention. So it's kind of an upside down model, right? Rather than paying for the content, you're charging for the content, which is back, 25 years ago, who would have done it? And then the model, all everybody started to use that model. The other thing that really impacted networks was the people that came on and advertised on their networks. If you're a network, you had to have revenue. And if you didn't get host revenue, right, the only other way was to get advertising revenue. And if you got advertising revenue, well, now you are limited to what they want you to talk about. So you have a very top-down approach with information in media today. They dictate to their anchors and their hosts what you can talk about and what you can't talk about. And that's mainly due to the advertising dollars behind those networks, right? So a lot of companies, if they weren't toting the line or they weren't speaking in the truth that these people wanted and thought was truth, then they were limited with the capital. And once you become dependent on a stream of capital where that makes up all of your capital, then you really either do what they say or you go out of business. So that really limited this industry in many, many ways. And so your independent companies out there, they struggled. And we're, of course, in that boat where we've struggled, but we've never changed our methods of doing business. In fact, quite the opposite. We just became more resolute in our idea that people should have a platform to bring forth the knowledge they believe in. I mean, there's a lot of belief systems out there, a lot of understandings. You're a communist? Great. Tell me why. If you're a socialist, great. Tell me why. Here's a place where we want information to grow from the bottom up, not from the top down. If I was a think tank and a business, I'd want 1,000 opinions around the table, not 1,000 people with the same opinion. It doesn't make sense. And
Right.
that's the same thing with information today when we're bringing it out to the people, but maybe they just don't want to allow for that. But we do, my brother and I truly do. So we're one of those few voices that we've been able to survive. We didn't bring on advertisers and sponsors. We just never went there. But we had to make a personal sacrifice. The sacrifice is, over 25 years, my brother and I haven't really had been able to take a salary. Over the past few years, it's been my brother and I's money that's kept this business afloat. So not only do we not make any money and we work constantly, we're giving the company constantly money. But to compete, let's say that you were in this industry and you decided, well, I'm gonna get in this industry and I'm gonna create a new media company. Well, you're now gonna have to compete against people like ourselves that don't derive a benefit, keep their costs very, very low, and work forever. Now, that's tough to compete against, right? Models that do that, they usually have hundreds of millions of dollars behind them, like Amazon, let's as an example, where they went out there and they sold products at losses for a half a decade in order to take over market share. And then they started to raise their prices, right? And then everybody started to fall in line because they had such huge distribution. So it's kind of a, I'm going to lose a lot of money in the beginning to make money in the end. But they had a lot of money back then backing them. My brother and I don't. There comes a point where you need assistance. And that happens every few years in this industry because it's a technology industry. It's kind of like a bar. If you had a bar, if you don't change the look and feel of it every few years, I don't really like to use that analogy because I don't go to bars. It's been a long, long time. But just as an example, then people start to leave. Well, in technology, there's things that you have to change: the look, the feel of the website, how it operates, the speed of it, the new technologies. And I can give you examples of that all day long. AI, for example, if you're not integrating AI right now, you're in the next couple of years, you're not going to be around. Software companies are getting hammered in the stock market. Why? Because we think that AI is going to make creating software almost instant and on the fly, right? There might come a point where you're watching a TV show and the TV show is being created instantly while you're watching it. While you're watching it, the code is being written to create the TV show that's entertaining you, and it knows you so well, it's going to keep you entertained. And that code is literally writing itself in real time. That's all coming. Things that AI can do for a company like ours. Well, it could give you accurate transcripts, keywords, summaries, images around your show. Tie all your information together with all the different information you had. It can make it searchable and categorize it instantly. Feed your information to all your social sites, no problem. All of this can be done automatically. It could literally write newsletters on the fly. So there's a lot of things that we know that it can help our hosts take their content, their audio content, and make it written text and really get it out there in a lot of ways, visually, through audio, through video, through text, through graphics, and distribute it smartly. For if you had a guest on your show, well, wouldn't it be wonderful if you had programs that would tell the guest and collect information from the guest about your show? Like, what did you think of the show? Would you give it a different title? What do you think the key aspect of the show was? Would you like to come back on the show? What's your next topic for the show? Or did you promote your show to your social sites? Is there a way we could collaborate on this? Maybe more emails. What do you think of this show's content? What I'm saying is it could propel the people that you work with and you're interviewing to really gain information from you about the show and kind of move the momentum forward. It could also drive ideas and understandings. And that could all be done automatically without the host going, oh boy, I got to sit back and I got to write this email. What do I do? It just takes so much time, right? All these things can be handled through an AI structure. Also, websites. I mean, you have cloud-based data that, like, if you were, let's say you had a video show. Well, to stream video live to a lot of people simultaneously is expensive. It's expensive. I'm telling you. You might be able to stream your video to four or five websites, but if you had 500 people pulling from your video stream, if you're a small Joe, you couldn't pull it off. You have your own server? Probably couldn't pull it off. Probably couldn't. You need the systems in place, or you're using somebody else's system. So whose system do we all use? Well, we all use YouTube. Why? Because it can go into that information, it can crunch that information, it can pull that information in segments and push it out there. It can analyze that information. And all of that is being done not because there's somebody behind a computer doing it. That's all being done literally by kind of like an AI system that's doing that, or code. So it's really leaving us in the background going, oh my God. And then they put rules in place like, well, now you have music in your show, but we don't pay royalty. We do. We pay royalties. I mean, we pay ASCAP, BMI, and CSAC. But if I distribute your show to a port outlet that doesn't have mute pay royalties, then they're got a problem. So what do? They just deny your show. Well, I have a piece of music that I bought for $50 and I talked over it and it's my intro. Well, how do they know? All they hear is a piece of music. They don't have any software that's capable of analyzing your show and saying, oh, it's royalty free or it's not, or somebody owns it or it's not. And the more and more rules they have, the more and more they're capable of doing that, the more and more rules they make, which only they can satisfy. It's an industry that's evolving, it's changing, and it requires you to be at the top of your game in order to survive. And my brother and I are very good at this. We've overcome the changes and advancements. But since we've started this company, we've been involved in two fires and one flood where we lost everything. Now, you can imagine in the technology business where you actually lose everything. I mean, your home gets burned to the ground. You don't even have data. You have nothing. You literally, you're starting from scratch. And then you got to deal with the lawyers. And then you have to deal with the insurance. And by the way, that doesn't take months. That takes years, years, if you can fully get over it. And technology advances. So we've been in three hardship positions while building this company, and we've overcome them. Same with other challenges that we've had to face. So we're in it for the long haul. There's nothing that's going to slow us down. We can stretch a dollar a long, long way. If we have a dollar, it's going to work in the company. It's not going to feed my brother and I. We're not going out there buying cars, or we love what we do. I wouldn't want to be in any industry. I know my brother thinks the same way. We feel that there's a lot of positive things that come out of a media company that has a mission to provide a platform where all opinion can discuss what they believe and share that belief with other people and let the world kind of decide without a top-down approach, but a bottom-up approach. And I think it's more necessary now than ever. I'm afraid that that might l be limiting into the future, because as these companies become more and more dominant, fewer and fewer companies that represent ownership of almost everything. And I could give you examples in almost every industry. You never give up your attempts to try to make a difference, to help people see another way. If we didn't have good hosts, it wouldn't be worth it. I mean, what's the use, right? But we have hosts that are truly beautiful souls. They have soul wealth. And to me, soul wealth is everything. And they have information that really allows people to feel those aha moments. Aha. And sometimes you have to feel those aha moments many times before you actually aha at a bigger level. And our hosts can do that for people. Every day, I'm learning something. I'm feeling something. I'm growing. I would challenge anybody to get involved in something where they have an impact on the world like this industry does. That's really everything in a nutshell, Sasha.
The radio station does connect with many countries out there. I do know it's in the triple figures. How many countries is it today?
Good question. Every single country and province in the world has come to our website over a period of a year or less. You might only have one in the smallest province in the world, which might not be a country per se, because they do have land masses. They don't consider countries, but they're sovereign, right? Or they have their own independence. Everybody in the world can access our information, and at some point they do. It might only be one or two in those very, very small land masses, but we find that it's everywhere in the world.
Station does host different types of entertainers, creators, musicians, writers. You also write on the website, and I came across one of your pieces where you talk about the truth and preserving the individual truth. Do you feel that we're living in the times that the business world is trying to standardize what the truth should be?
Oh boy, you're getting into some heavy subject matter. Yes, I believe history is being revised. I believe words are being they're being used in such a way that they change the meaning of it. And that also changes the historical works based on how we feel about those words today. That's a battle that we're all, that's ongoing. And I think into the future, that's going to become more problematic in that there'll be such a revision of what we know in order to kind of create the backstory for individuals that want to control the masses. But on a spiritual level, I truly believe information is written into your DNA. Everybody wonders where gravity comes from. I believe information is gravity. And that's what creates the force of attraction. Either you like something or you dislike it. And so you're pushing and you're pulling like a computer that's on and off, and it's constantly doing that. Light on one line, and on the opposite end of that same line is dark, up, down. It's all one line, and it's on the line. But you pull that line towards you by liking or disliking, and that creates the angle. So the information is in all the angles, the on and offs, which is written within our cells. So I don't think information is ever lost, and I think it's recorded permanently. But the information on a broader sense, what we don't experience, but we can only experience through the words and works of others, and
Right.
that revision, that also has its impact. That's a tough question. I wish we all could see truth by just viewing it, and it would appear to us like if I looked at a human being and you had 10 bands of colors radiating from your body, each color representing a certain understanding, maybe I could read you without, having to go, wow, and then the truth is there, and then I can make the correct judgments moving forward with what I see and know, rather than dealing with somebody with a helmet or something on that I can't see. I'd rather truth be obvious than not obvious. But today, power gains its power from secrets. It doesn't gain its power from truth. There have been many experiments that are done based on that. And so if they can keep something hidden, they can then use that information that you might not have. And I don't know if I feel that's good. You could say to me, well, geez, let's say there's a company that spends $100 billion creating something. It has the right to keep that information secret and not share it with the world and charge the world for that. Yes, and that makes the capitalistic machine work. I, on the other hand, am just the opposite. If you came to me and I spent all my life putting together a piece of information and I knew it could benefit you or the world, I'd give it to you freely, even if knowing that you could make it better and you'd take off and make a great deal of money with it. To me, that's the great thing of life, being able to do that for other people. Companies don't have that. They don't get rewarded for that, which is kind of sad. So we as individuals, we don't operate on that level of truth so much. I wish that weren't the case. But I'm a very spiritual man, Sasha, and I really would like everything to be kind of upfront and known.
Beijing is hosting a GoFundMe campaign, and I'm aware that it shines light on the new endeavors that will help develop the station more. How can the benefactors of change and contributors participate?
Thank you for that question, Sasha. Really, I appreciate that. My brother and I, we're going to continue to put our money forward in this company. The only drawback is, again, the speed at which things it can occur. If we do it ourselves, then the technology that we try to incorporate might start to get old, and then we get behind the eight ball. And but we can do it. It might take me 5 years to do it with my own money versus a few months to, if we could do it with other people's money. Well, in 5 years, that might be obsolete. But with a little bit of help, we can create systems and utilize technologies and implement them fairly quickly and not get behind the eight ball and move rapidly to build ourselves to get a lot more awareness to our network. people, if they've ever, listened to BBS radio and had an aha moment or been changed by, what a host says, or been motivated or just uplifted. That's the sort of information we bring to the table, and we're going to continue to. And to support that, we've created a GoFundMe account. It's easier just to go to BBS Radio, boyboysamradio.com. And there's a little icon just to the right on the homepage that says GoFundMe. Every little bit truly helps. When my brother and I went through the last fire, it was the biggest fire in California's history at the time. 87 people died. We had 2 acres of land, a creek, a three-story home. My brother, I, there were 4 children, my brother's wife. We were all residing in there with our offices. And it was just a couple blocks from the town of Paradise. It was a harrowing experience even getting out of there. But when we lost everything, a friend of ours put up a GoFundMe account. A friend, can you believe? And there was such an outpouring of giving where people wanted to give us checks of $25,000. We looked at each other and we said, no, we can't. We just said no to the money. We reached our goal where we could buy the equipment we needed and be up and running again, which didn't take us long. We were up and running within a month. Hard to believe, but we were. But that experience of kindness from everybody that wanted to help us get through that very difficult moment in our lives, and that one was probably the most difficult because there was so much tragedy. I couldn't stop crying. I couldn't believe it. I'm still kind of, I get emotional when I think about it, because everybody wonders if there are people out there that care, if there are people out there that are affected by the things that they do. You wonder sometimes, will anybody show up if I no longer here? Will they remember me well? Was there anything I, did that affected them in such a way that they think about that? It was so emotional because I realized that there were so many people that really were impacted by BBS Radio. It changed so many lives. So that experience gave me more than what I lost. By far, by far. I got to feel the energy and the love from so many people in society, so overwhelming, and my heart exploded. I just want to thank everybody just for even the time to listen. I'm very thankful. Thank you, Sasha. Thank you. And thank you to your listening audience.
Doug, as we start to wind down, do you have any words of wisdom for the BBS radio audience?
I'd love to allow my twin brother to say hi, if that's possible, Sasha.
Sure.
Here's Donald.
Wow, Sasha, it is a pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for allowing both of us on the network, on your talk show. That really is a privilege. I say that because I mean it. I've listened to your programming. I think I know you. I feel you, the kind of energy that you encompass, and I appreciate you allowing us on your program. I just don't have words for it. So thank you. Thank you.
Well, it is my pleasure, and I am embarrassed to admit to this day I cannot distinguish both of your voices.
So it's very difficult. We're both kind of monotone.
Right, we do have the same voice. We are twins, although we are fraternal. Fraternal twins, or is that fraternal? I never can tell. Is it fra or fa? But we do look identical. In fact, we're a peculiar set of twins that look identical, even though we're not. And I couldn't tell our pictures apart until we were, a young boys. I couldn't tell our baby pictures and younger pictures apart, nor could my brother. And we could switch places at will, although we never did that. Our mother was a profound individual, and she wouldn't allow that, those kind of games being played. So we never did that, but we could have. We looked that much alike, and we think alike, we work alike, we act alike. It's strange. It really is strange. I wish I had pictures to show people, although I had 6 boxes of pictures from relatives from the Newsom family, but they did end up being burned up in the Paradise Fire. So unfortunately, I don't even have a picture of my mother or father, sad as that is, and it is. I really wish I did. So we kind of have to go off memory, but we still look quite similar today. Sometimes he grows a little facial hair, sometimes I do, sometimes he wears little different clothes. But if we decided to dress up the same and cut our hair the same, it would be difficult probably for many to tell us apart.
Wonderful to know.
And I want to say one more thing. You know, my brother is the articulate one. He has a way with words. You know, he studied under some extremely brilliant people at Pacific Lutheran University and studied music and composition and the arts and finance. And he has a very articulate way of saying things and writing. So most of what you'll see throughout the internet, if it's done well, you can just pretty much assume that my brother did it. He has quite a flavor about him for that, and I appreciate that because I'm a, you know I my artistry stops at a stick figure. So, but you know when it came to these campaigns for you know informing others of our situation and our needs, he's put most of that together, and I have to commend him for it because. You know, like he said, the people, the fans, the hosts, the guests, our entire audience stepped up to the plate and they showed us what real compassion, real kindness is. And, you know, that, I mean, gratitude is kind of a very demure word for how we felt because they literally changed our world and our circumstance and our future. And here we are today, living the dream, so to speak. We're still in business. We're looking to expand. We have a wonderful future, wonderful people now a part of our program. And, you know, we need a little help because we have credit lines that we have had to take out in order to facilitate this, the next step in our evolution. And, we depend on our hosts, our listeners, our fans, for not only to keep the community, which is so important to us, but in order to keep us afloat. So far we've been able to manage that ourselves, and we could continue to. I mean, you know, Doug won't say this, but we're not poor, we're not rich. We don't have all the trappings that many people love to have. We just don't find that appealing. But you know, we have enough means that we could make this company work, but making it thrive is something quite different when it comes to media and technology. And we happen to be in both. We happen to be in the techno media industry. And the landscape changes so fast, especially right now. It's changing so fast that we understand that if we don't, you know, change aspects of our software and our hardware and how we do things, we're going to fall behind. And if we try to keep the pace with our own money, we're going to fall behind. And we don't want to, you know, it's a robust network with a community that's been developed that with love. And our listeners and our fans, they prove that with the emails and the correspondence we get. And we really want to do a first-rate job for them and keep it so that independent voices can be heard and can be heard all over the world without being stonewalled, blacklisted, ghosted, and a diversity of opinions can get out there. And can be relevant and can make a difference in the lives of others. So to us, it's extremely important that we step up to the plate and make this happen. Because right now we're in, you know, everybody knows that with AI changing the industry, it really is a necessity for us to do so. So we're appealing to, you know, everyone. And we started a little GoFundMe campaign. And we're, you know, if people want to go there, they can go to our website. They can click on the GoFundMe and help us that way. Many people have elected to just click on our website, and at the bottom right, there's a little donate button. They can donate with us via PayPal, Venmo, credit card, or even subscribe to the BBS radio system itself. And so others have been doing that, and we truly appreciate it. And thank you, Sasha. I'm going to swing you back to Doug. He's actually the one who's been engineering your show and working with you a lot. And I must say he's tickled by you, and I am too. So thank you. I appreciate your time and allowing us on your show. Thank you, Sasha. I'm going to swing
welcome,
it back
Don.
Through to Doug. Now to your last question was to impart words of wisdom.
Yes.
I do have one. I believe this all my life, which is funny. If you asked me if there was an aspect of me I wanted to grow, and if I was like a light that shined out infinitely into the stars at the end point, who would I be, right? Why would I be, you know, valuable to everything else? I would want to be the definition of kindness, which I believe is love in action. I almost think kindness is more powerful than love. Isn't that odd? In the spiritual community, love is a very powerful word. But love in action, kindness. Kindness is something that we should all seek to bring forth within our own being, even to ourselves. I think that action of kindness is really the most important thing one can do.
Very wise, Doug. I agree with you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Sasha Talks.
Thank you, Sasha. With so much love and big hugs. Thank you.
And everyone is welcome to go to bbsradio.com to check out the radio station. And you're welcome to consider a contribution. It is going to a wonderful cause that keeps on paying itself forward. Thank you for joining us tonight. Welcome to Writer's Series, Doug.
Well, thank you, Sasha. Thank you kindly for inviting me. I appreciate that.
You are the founder of BBS Radio, Inc. You are a ghostwriter and an author. How were you introduced to the craft of writing?
When I was young, I wrote poetry. It was probably the easiest way for me to put into words a way, you know, some of my feelings and thoughts, and also to tantalize people that knew me. I wanted them to think. I wanted them to kind of, you know, go in a different place where words could take you. And so I found poetry was a way to do that. I would literally, when I was younger, I would read works by Robert Frost, for example, and I would take his poem and I would rewrite it in my own words, using the same meter, the same sort of nuances, the tone, the lines, how many lines, how it's written, almost everything. If they used a lot of similes, great. I would try to duplicate that. And I did this with a lot of people who wrote poetry. And that led to more instances of writing down my thoughts. I had a very interesting life, my brother and I, when we were young. We actually, you know, since we were knee-high to a grasshopper, we worked. You know, if you were old enough to stand up, you were old enough to hold a paintbrush. You know, we grew up on a farm and everybody worked. When I got a little bit older, I was about 15 years old. I graduated fairly young from school. I skipped a year ahead. I went to university at a young age. But even before, while I was in high school, I was working in finance with my twin brother and high finance. I mean, the sort of thing that you've seen in the movie Wall Street. Well, that was my brother's and my life, where you had 10 people in a room trying to build companies and sell stock. Age of 15 and a half, I was dealing with brokers, desk traders, major partners of over 30 brokerage firms that traded worldwide. And it was a very heady experience. And the characters that were a part of that experience were hard to forget. A lot of things occurred that I wanted to put down on paper. I just needed to do that because it was so painful. I mean, we went from making a lot to losing everything, to making a lot to losing everything, to making a lot to losing everything. I mean, it's just in very brief periods of time. I can't say too much. I'm sorry, Sasha, I can't. And that's why I never published the book, because I dealt with a lot of very powerful people. And I couldn't use the names of the people. And I couldn't, it was just, it was too scary, too scary. You don't want to know what I think about large companies and the people and how they made their millions and what they do. And if you get into their machine, how you literally can be ripped apart and how disingenuous and corrupt the system really is. It would just shock you to your core. So, but I had to write this. I had to write this, and I had to use, fake names and tell the story, and I did. And I called it Doom the Deal, but I could never publish it and I could never share it. And I must have written a couple hundred pages, but that only encompassed the first couple of months I was in business. By the time I was 16 year 15 and a half to 16 years old, I just had to stop. I couldn't do it. I showed it to a couple people that were in business with me, and they wanted me to finish it, but I knew I just couldn't, because there was too many powerful people that would have known who they were, and it might have been a very bad thing. So I put that aside. And then years went by, and my brother and I built a few companies, again, with very powerful people, some of the biggest names people have heard of on this continent at the time. And once again, my brother and I would spend all of our time, all of our energy building these companies. And at the end of the day, literally, we were screwed out of the deal. And I can remember once where a company went public. We created the business plans. We raised all the money. We did everything from A to Z. All they did was spend the money, and then they went public, and for almost $1 billion. And it was payday time. I thought we were going to make $33 million, my brother and I. And I thought, boy, this is payday. That's why the lawyers want us to come on in. I can remember sitting there at the boardroom table, and the lawyers just looked at us from across the table and said, "We're going to quote, we're going to screw you out of this money, and there's nothing you're going to be able to do about it." Well, that wasn't just one instance where that occurred to my brother and I. There were three instances where my brother and I literally took ideas from the napkin level, funded the corporations, put together the business plans, brought the deals to the table, and ended up at the end of the day with nothing, even losing, because you put your money where your mouth is. We put whatever we had into it as well. It was horrific. And then I had a person fly in who just kept on giving money, Sasha. But I was able to raise, in the course of, a decade, so much money, so much money. And these people kept on wanting to give money to the projects that we put forward because they knew that we believed in them. But what I didn't know, because I was young, is that, you might believe in the deal. Let's say you have a product, and the product is going to create an all-natural way of treating your skin, and your skin is just going to glow, and it's going to change the cosmetics industry, and it's the greatest product in the world. I believe in that. But the people are more impactful
on the company's trajectory and its outcome than the product. And it took a long time for me to understand if I had a diamond, a carat, one carat diamond that a company could make and they were selling it for $10 a carat, but the management was bad, it still would go nowhere. But if the management was good, it could literally take dung and sell it for a profit. So it was all about the people. It wasn't the product. But when you're young, you don't realize that. You don't understand the value of the people. You kind of see the product value, and that's what you run based on. And that was a big mistake. I had a gentleman fly in, and he flew in about 4 or 5 months after he got caught in a fishing boat accident the day he was going to retire with a fleet of fishing boats. And he got his legs and his arms caught in the winch. And they flattened, literally flattened his arms and his legs. He was in a wheelchair. He constantly had pain, neuro pain. It was just terrible. He flew in. I can remember getting off the plane. It took him to his hotel, and then we went to a restaurant. And he just started staring into my eyes. And he says, "Doug, you know, I have this gift where I can look at your iris and the areas around your eyes, and I can tell you, I can basically look into your soul, and I can tell you if you're sick or if there's certain bodies that are problematic." And he said, I would give to you, and I would continue to give to you because I love you. He just said so many beautiful things. Afterwards, I thought, here I am. I've lost him money now 3 times, and he wants to continue to give to me. It broke me. Sasha, it broke me. It broke me. The kindness, knowing that he still wanted to give, even though he knew I trusted the wrong people with his money. And by the way, all those companies are alive to this day, and they made the founders a lot of money. It's just the initial shareholders that lost with me and my brother. But that overwhelming kindness, it had such an impact on me, I went into hiding. I said, I'm done. I need to haul myself up in a studio apartment, and I don't want to see the world. I don't want to interact with it anymore. Literally, for 2 years, all I did was meditate. I mean, literally, that's all I did. I would meditate from morning to night, and I might have a drink of water, have a bite in, go right back into meditating. And things occurred. I didn't know anything about meditation. Didn't have any expectations. All I wanted to do was revisit the people that showed such kindness and thank them and say, I'm sorry, and try to find forgiveness and to forgive all the people that created so much loss for so many good souls. It was a process. And then from there, that process led to such overwhelming feelings inside that I wanted to share that. So I imagined, you know, taking in all this energy from all that is and then blowing it out over the world, kind of like sharing all the good that could come from within me to the rest of the world. And from there, I started to feel different and reach levels of peace, even inner awareness on some level. And that migrated into feelings that I wanted to expand on. So the feeling might be, let's say I give you a hug. Well, I can give you a hug. How does that feel? Well, can I, in the next hug, can I make it a little deeper feeling? Oh, how does that feel? Just like a breath. How many times do you think you could make a hug feel even stronger? Well, now do that on every breath for 10 hours. So every breath, you're trying to take that feeling higher. Once you do that, feeling starts to release chemicals through your body. And things started to really occur. And then from there, I started to see energy. Gee, I'd always do this in a dark room with my eyes open. Unlike all meditators today, I did it with my eyes open. And then I'd fog them up a little bit. And I'd have a sliver of light coming into the room. And I'd imagine that light being God's beautiful energy. I'd imagine that come into my forehead and fill me up. You do that for 6 months, I can almost guarantee you that that light will become a golden rod. You'll think it's real now, and it'll move into you. And sooner or later, it starts happening without you even doing it. Rods of light flying through the walls, hitting you in the head, and they're like moments of instant ecstasy. Bam, ecstasy, ecstasy. And you don't even know why, but it's starting to affect you that way. Well, one day I was towel drying. I was literally in my shower. I got out. My back was to the mirror where I brushed my teeth, and I was towel drying with my towel moving from my left to my right, from my lower shoulder to upper portion of my right shoulder, and I just started pulling it up, and bam, a big golden rod going right through your back of your neck, down your body torso, into the ground, and immediately expanding into a circle. Bam, outwards. And all I could see was white energy, filament. Then from there, amazing things. It was just instant peace at a level that's indescribable. Instant connectivity on a level that's indescribable. Instant, call it Christ consciousness, at a level that's indescribable. I reviewed every moment of my life almost. I was able to forgive and love and peace and joy, all of it. And then when I came out of it, I was screaming. My fingers were trying to reach the ceiling. I was on my tippy toes and I was crying. I was screaming in ecstasy. I couldn't believe it. No human being could. I can't. There's no description for something like this. And then for the next 3 months, I experienced things that are impossible to duplicate, almost impossible to believe, but they occurred, but I can't duplicate them. And I was shown many different things. Like one day I was given kind of like a Rain Man's brain. You see the movie Rain Man, where he threw up 1,000 toothpicks and you wonder why that he could count them all so fast? Because your brain is capable of seeing them all individually with the same attention. Like right now, if I look at something, I can try to get the attention of that thing I'm focusing on, but the thing beside it, I can't. It's separate. I need to focus on these things separately. But your brain is capable of doing that. Other things, music, shown a time where I created a piece of music where there were 17 layers to the music. Energy beings, what do they look like? They look like, you ever seen the movie Star Trek when they phase in and out? Well,
Yes.
imagine that energy being translucent. You can see through it. It takes a shape of you or me, and outer rim of it all looks like it's sparkly, kind of. So translucent with kind of an energy flow from it. I saw beings walk around me, which was the strangest thing because they never talked to me. They never talked to me. I did have a little dog at the time where the squid came out of the wall. It looked like a squid. I don't know what else to call it. Came out of the ceiling, hovered around my finger. Finger started to turn into a vortex of energy molecules, and my arm started to disappear and then went green and brown and a vortex of energy like a whirlwind. My arm just disappeared and then boom, it was back. And I couldn't believe it. I was like, just impossible. Go touch my dog's ear. Went and started touching the dog, couldn't stop grabbing its ear. Touch the dog's tail. And I just had to get verification with some other being that this was occurring. And my dog was the only thing that was there. So that was the only proof I got. But I can't give you proof that it occurred. And I couldn't even tell you, was it my own energy? I don't know. Was I in some way creating this kind of energy structure that was doing this? Maybe. I don't know. I can't explain so much of what occurred. Because I was at a level, my mind was dealing with high thoughts. Like I kind of understood the idea of Christ instantly, you know, when he said what I believe he said, which would be the most impactful because it's the highest level of thought, is forgive them, Lord. They know not what they do. Well, at a higher level, you forgive everything. Why? It's like an ant comes to bite you. It's not looking to harm you. It doesn't know it's going to harm you per se. It's just doing what it does naturally. Well, human beings in many ways are like that. You got to forgive them. If they knew that they were connected with everything like a spider web, you're an angle. You're connected to the whole web. So if you destroy somebody else's web, you're going to fall off. You know, you might not think so, but that's only because you're an angle. You see yourself differently. Kind of like being in a piece of paper where you're floating out of it and you got a little light bulb on your head and you're out of the paper and you're going, look at me. I can't see anything. I must be alone here. No, you still got the string connected to the paper, which is part of everything. You might know it, but once it becomes a part of your being, it is.
if you knew that at that level, you wouldn't harm other people. You wouldn't lie to yourself. You wouldn't do it because you'd know it only affects you at some level. It affects them, but it affects you. So lies would become a thing of the past. You would help the world. Because I knew this. I knew this was where we needed to go as a society. I wanted to write this down in a book, and I wrote The Bible to Self-Awareness, another thing I have not published.
Why not?
There's a couple reasons, but the main reason is that the word karma has a meaning to it that also says that you're going to have a balance that's going to occur because of your being. Okay, you do something wrong, there's going to be a reaction. But at the highest level, I don't know whether that's true or not. So once I understood that I didn't know whether that was true or not, I then had to question everything else. And I didn't want to put out anything until I had more awareness. And I'm still gaining awareness. I wrote that in 2004. I had my Kundalini in October of 2004. I'm still gaining awareness. I take things deeper. And I don't want to be the focal point of the world when I'm not absolutely 100% sure. You know, I've always dreamed of at some point going in and being able to take a couple years off again and meditating to that degree. That's insane talk because literally you give up your life at that point. But the rewards are so vast that it's worth it. Believe me. But I don't know if you can acquire that twice. I don't know if you're supposed to acquire that twice, or if there's a level of, once you've acquired it, you can maintain that. I've heard that there's masters out there that are able to maintain those levels. I don't know. I haven't spoken to other people to the point where I believe what they're saying is true at that level. People talk about a Kundalini and awareness today, and I'm sure there are, but that's different for all of us because we all have bridges to that, right? And it's all and each of us is going to have a little different bridge to that level of awareness or higher levels of awareness. So I don't really know. For example, like we talk about dimensions. I can give you way more dimensions than the dimensions that we talk about today. Does that mean that there's more than three or four dimensions? Are there more than 10 dimensions? Some people are talking mathematically. There might be 12 dimensions, 17 dimensions. I don't know, but here's a dimension. What if in one dimension, God exists, in another dimension, God doesn't exist? Here's another dimension. What if in one dimension, God cannot separate its parts into pieces? In another dimension, God can separate its part into pieces. I mean, I'm just giving you an example. So dimensions to me are kind of infinite in possibilities. Maybe those possibilities and how we're going to evolve into infinity, those possibilities will exist on some level. So I don't want to believe that karma is a yay or nay. It's kind of like the idea of a dimension. Maybe in one dimension there is karma, but maybe in one dimension there is no karma. So who's to say I'm the great teacher that can tell you anything? I'm just not that smart, Sasha.
Or maybe you're a humble writer. Given all of your writing experiences, is there one major lesson learned that stands out in your lifetime to date?
Is there anything that stands out in all my writings?
Right, a lesson learned. Because one thing you touched upon was you don't want to appear to be the authority source on a topic at the same time that ties into research, and you're talking about it from your perspective.
You know, I always wanted to help others bring their authority to the table. There was many opportunities in my life where I could have stood on stages, one in music. Two, I was interviewed to be on television on three different mediums where they really wanted to do something with me. But I never really wanted that limelight per se, Sasha. My goal has kind of been to really create a system where you become the limelight, because I think that changes
a person. I didn't want it to change me where I couldn't, my focus wasn't about building something for everybody and, you know, without me really being the dominant theme. And it works for me. But what have I learned? What's the greatest thing I learned in all my writing? That's a good question because I've never thought about that before. And now we have AI, right? And it does so much of the writing and the thinking for people. And that scares me a little bit because I see society waning as a result if they allow for something else to do a lot of the work. I think that's how societies fail, really. I think that ultimately, if we have a society where we create a tool that that then creates itself or becomes so nuanced that we can't figure it out and develop it any further, then we really kind of fall behind and the tool then takes over. And then as we fall behind, we become more prone to allowing things to occur, like a culture. If you're dominant, you take over another culture and you, let's say through war or whatever, and then there's peace for a long, long time. You kind of forget the tactics of war and you just let you, and then something comes in and attacks you and takes your world away. Well, it might be the same with knowledge. You know, if you don't continue to expand that, you allow something else to do the work for you. Well, just like being a society that's maintained peace so long that doesn't understand war gets taken over by those that find those barriers that aren't in place or ways in because you aren't ready for it because you had such a long period of sleep. It might be the same with information. That's a worry that society is going to go that route, but then it goes in cycles, you know, in 1 million-year period. Maybe it's supposed to go like that, where you have a society that grows up and it goes through these patterns and then folds away, and then another one comes up and takes its place and learns something and folds away. And we might have had civilizations, many, many civilizations, before the ones they report about to us in our education system. There might have been, you know, civilizations that lived 50,000 years ago, a million years ago, 50 million years ago, that might have gone through the same sort of experiences. It's just that they're so old, we can't see the remnants of that information. Is there any dominant theme, important thing that comes from my works? Not really. I don't reread them. I don't go into those works again. They've been put away for a long, long time. I kind of keep the past to the past. I'm not one of those people who lives in the past. I live in the future. I've just been through so many difficult moments in my life. I don't want to think about the past, and I have for periods of time, but it doesn't do you really any good. So I'm either living here now or my mind's worrying about something that's possible in the future. The past is gone. I just don't reside there.
And for a writing tip, do you have a writing tip that you were given or that you discovered along the way of writing?
Interestingly enough, my brother and I aren't the kind of people that read directions. You're not going to find me reading the directions of how to put together a shelf. And my brother was the same way when he built BBS Radio. That's why it's so uniquely different. He didn't go into radio networks and analyze them so he could build BBS Radio. It all kind of came about organically. Donald and I are very much like that. We don't really read the words and works of others to come to an overall understanding. We kind of evolve it ourselves. It's fun that way. It can be challenging that way because, you know, the best way to learn is to find a mentor who's been there and done that and takes you through the pitfalls, and you probably get ahead much quicker. But my brother and I haven't utilized, you know, mentors or instructions or things like that to move ahead.
Well, you're a wonderful orator. As for writing, do you have a favorite word?
The last book I read, even though this is frou-frou and out there, but it's called The Bible. I mean, The Bible to Self-Awareness. Hey, look at that. The Disappearance of the Universe by Gary Renard. Interesting book. lot of interesting books out there, but that's an interesting read.
And tying back all of the blogging, article writing, and other types of writing you do, you also feature your work on VBSradio.com. Can you talk to how writers and authors could benefit on contributing and the GoFundMe initiative that you're hosting at the moment?
Sure. We're right now developing out a new website. We have five servers, and it's going to really allow us to feature information and make that information available in search parameters across a lot of websites and feeds. So we're going to expand into not just audio and video, but also writing. And feature that information on BBS Radio TV because it's important. That's just a medium that we want to utilize to get information out to the public. Anybody who likes to write articles would be very welcome on BBS Radio TV. And it'll take us a while to develop this new website. It's going to be very, very good. I mean, it's going to be very appealing. We've got some phenomenal people working on it. I think it's going to bring a lot of attention to anybody who wishes to write articles and put them on BBS Radio's website. And there's going to be a whole section that features just writers, but that's all something that's coming. And so just check back on bbsradio.com as we move forward. We could use your support. We really could. It's a difficult thing to ask for support. We do need help financially to expand this network in a time when AI is the driving force behind the new developments, that if we don't match that pace, or if we don't start utilizing those technologies, we're going to be kind of left behind. Every company has to do every few years is really invest in upgrading. Well, we're at that stage. It's costly. It's more money than my brother and I can give to the company. My brother and I have given this company probably just in the past couple of years, $100,000 out of our own money just to make sure it continues to survive. But there comes a point where you just can't do that and you need outside help. The pace to implement change can't take years. If they were to take 2 or 3 years because we were doing it ourselves, we would once again be behind the eight ball and we would probably fail. My brother and I have been doing this for 25 years. And we don't intend to fail or go the way of the dodo bird like most of the companies in this industry have. So we're really reaching out to our audience and people who love the network, who have been inspired by our hosts, who've had information help them or help their friends. We encourage you to, please go to bbsradio.com. There's a little GoFundMe image on the right side of the homepage of bbsradio.com, like in Boy Boy Sam, and click on the GoFundMe link and help us if you can. And we would appreciate it. If you can't support us, just go to the website, maybe write a host, just acknowledge that you've heard information that they like. That is the most impactful support we can get. We really love it when you email our host, encourage them. But we want to thank you just for listening, just for being a part of our community, for taking the time just to listen to the show and me ranting. We truly appreciate that.
Deb, we're going to end with a recreational question. When you're writing, is there anything that you do while you're writing? Do you have a ritual that you're having a cup of coffee, music in the background? What do you do?
I usually have noise around me. Isn't that interesting? A lot of people want a quiet space when they write. I kind of like activity around me because I've always been where there's a lot of people and a lot of things happening. I really couldn't escape. There was a period I could escape, which I told you about. So I'd put myself in a right in the kind of offshoot where all that activity is happening around me. And then I would just start to put thoughts in my head, ideas, and I'd make bullet points. So I usually have a cup of coffee, absolutely. And I'd think of a theme or an understanding or a phrase.
that could move the information forward. And then you just gotta kind of write. You just gotta kind of go at it. And then afterwards, you'll go back through it. And you might go back through it a lot of times. You know, unlike most people, they'll put together an outline. I know you, and I've heard this a lot, the outline. There's who are the characters? What are their parts? You know, what is their mission? Where are they going? What is the end result of this whole thing? You have it all mapped out. I've never been one of those people who did that. I always wanted the information to kind of flow from me. So it would just be an environment where there was noise, you know, maybe a Denny's restaurant. I did most of my writing at Denny's restaurant, can you believe? Right. I got cup after cup of coffee. There was no noise around me, and I could just write. Yeah.
Doug, thank you for sharing your story and your writing insights.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Sasha. I truly appreciate you allowing me to be a guest on your show. Thank you. Thank you very much. I truly appreciate you and your audience. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to listen.